Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. I don't have a lot of time to do the opening monologue today, so I'm just going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to read my favorite verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. The Bhagavad Gita, for those of you who don't know, is a 5,000-year-old scripture, which is one of my favorite texts existing in the universe. It's the translation that I'm currently reading is by Eknath Iswaran, and it's a really good translation, which you can get on Amazon.com. And the Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue that takes place between a warrior named Arjuna and his spiritual advisor, Krishna, and it takes place on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which means sacred truth or sacred duty, and the whole thing is a metaphor relating to the struggles that all of us face in the battlefield of life that all of us find ourselves on, when we inevitably have to confront enemies that we either are afraid of getting destroyed by or afraid of destroying. It's a great book. You should definitely read it if you haven't read it yet. And at DuncanTrussell.com, it's actually the book that is being read for the book club. But this is one of my favorite verses. It's for all of you who just started smoking again or started drinking again or have been beating yourself up for letting your meat body grab the reins of your sense chariot and drive you into a ditch. This will make you feel a little better. Okay, Arjuna. Krishna, what happens to one who has faith but who lacks self-control and wanders from the path, not attaining success in yoga? If he becomes deluded on the spiritual path, will he lose the support of both worlds like a cloud scattered in the sky? Krishna, you can dispel all doubts. Remove this doubt which binds me. Krishna, Arjuna, my son, such a person will not be destroyed. No one who does good work will ever come to a bad end, either here or in the world to come. When such people die, they go on to other realms where the righteous live. They dwell there for countless years and then are reborn into a home which is pure and prosperous. Or they may be born into a family where meditation is practiced. To be born into such a family is extremely rare. The wisdom they have acquired in previous lives will be reawakened, Arjuna, and they will strive even harder for self-realization. Indeed, they will be driven on by the strength of their past disciplines. Even one who inquires after the practice of meditation rises above those who simply perform rituals. Through constant effort over many lifetimes, a person becomes purified of all selfish desires and attains the supreme goal of life. That's a really great verse. What does it mean? Well, what it means to me is that you can't, don't be in a hurry about this thing. Don't feel like you've got to do the whole, put on the whole spiritual act and start eating vegan food and putting on lavender scented oils and doing fake smiles at the shopping mall. And don't feel like when you inevitably fall down from this silly fake platform where you are parading around as this thing or that thing and end up with your head buried in the pussy of a stripper at a Best Western with the stink of gin rising up from the carpet and condoms scattered all over the floor and stuck in the back of your throat, it doesn't mean that you can't go back to meditating. And in fact, it doesn't mean that that itself can't be a wonderful teacher for you or a moment of meditation. You don't have to beat yourself up because you go back into the old patterns every once in a while. And you can't expect to escape from the old patterns instantly just because you started meditating or had a few good months where you were disciplined. It doesn't work like that. We're in this thing for the long haul. And what that means is that we exist in a infinite time-space continuum, and we're all made up of atomic particles, which will go on forever and ever. And these atomic particles have swirled together temporarily to create the meat body, which you ride around in, and which you have decided is you, and which you have become completely attached to. But this thing is a really long trip that we're on here, a really long, 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 long trip. And sometimes in the midst of your spiritual life, you might find yourself getting fisted by a stripper wearing a goat's mask and named Strawberry in Bangladesh, or you might find yourself blasted on opium in some opium den in Thailand and you can't remember your name, or you might find yourself stuck in a Diablo 3 vortex that you can't escape from, staring down as your asymmetrical love handles expand and bloat like some kind of air mattress rising up out of your stomach. It happens. But the point is, beating yourself up about it is only compounding the problem. It's only bringing you deeper into the mire. You just have to shake it off, dust yourself off, and try again, as that song goes by, I think, the lady who died in a plane accident. You got to just do it. You got to keep just recognize you're gonna fall off the path. You're gonna end up fisting your grandmother. You're gonna end up snorting crystal meth off the back of a corpse in a graveyard sometimes. But it doesn't mean you can't keep meditating. It doesn't mean that you can't keep chanting. It doesn't mean that you can't keep moving forward. And I think that's what that verse says. So don't beat yourself up. Recognize the fact that everything around you is a learning opportunity, and that it's not all gurus and blasts of love coming in from the transcendent. Sometimes the teachers will appear to you in the form of enemies. Sometimes the teachers will appear to you in the form of horrible situations at work that seem insurmountable. But when you realize that these horrible situations are just masks that are being worn by the spirit of love, which fuels all things in the universe, it makes them a little easier to deal with. And so the next time you find yourself in some disgusting dive bar contemplating licking the putrid nipples of the 65-year-old crack milf sitting next to you, don't feel completely defeated. Those putrefied nipples are actually the extrusion of God. And if you end up sucking them, well, you know what? Maybe don't do that. Don't do that. Don't suck on the milf snips in that old crack house. Get out of there if you can. But most other things are okay. Okay, you guys, so let's do some business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is sponsored by Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-Shirts is a T-shirt company in Thailand that produces some of the softest T-shirts available on the market. These T-shirts are so soft that once you feel them on your skin, you will not want anything else to touch you. I don't let anything touch me now. Unless it's a Sure Design T-shirt, it better stay the fuck away from me or it's gonna get a black eye. I want soft, sweet fabric covering my meat body, not some rough old crap cotton made by some asshole in New Jersey. I want my shit soft. Thai soft. Thailand soft. And if anybody knows about soft fabric, it's people who live in Thailand and who have access to some of the finest opium, heroin, and all the great softening drugs available to human beings. It's Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-Shirts takes the experience of heroin and turns it into a T-shirt. They have matter assimilators attached to junkies, and they basically inject heroin into the veins of these stinky Thai junkies, and they translate the experience of being blasted out of your mind on the finest heroin into these computers, which reassimilate them in the form of the fabrics that Sure Design T-Shirts uses to make their awesome T-shirts, which also have on them the hallucinations that the heroin addicts experience in the depths of their intoxication. These get projected from the minds of the heroin addicts onto the t-shirts using some kind of crazy advanced computer that these guys found in the rubble of a spaceship crash somewhere in Siberia. So they're a great t-shirt company. Go there. Sure Design T-Shirts. They don't just make t-shirts. They also make hoodies and a lot of other incredible stuff. And if you go there and put my name into the thing, you get 10% off, which is really incredible when you consider the fact that you're going to be wearing the material manifestation of a heroin addict's orgasmic intoxication. Man, you can't beat that. 10% off, what a great deal. Go there and support our sponsors. I love these guys. They are a really fine company, and they deserve your support. shoredesigntshirts.com. The link will be at duncantrussell.com, so you can just go there and click on the link and do your t-shirt shopping there. Okay? I'd like to thank all of those who have donated to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour in the past month. Thank you so much. Your donations keep this thing running. Your donations are the fuel which sends this ship drifting into the weird corners of the multiverse. Thank you very much for watering the garden of this podcast with your green energy. I am blown away that you do it. I know that you don't have to, and the fact that you spend the time to send a few dollars my way really means a lot. And for those of you who haven't donated, consider to yourself the pleasure that you get out of this podcast. What is the pleasure you get out of this podcast greater or less than the pleasure that you get from a fancy lubricated condom? Think about that. A box of Trojans costs about, I don't know. Actually, unfortunately, I don't have any idea how much condoms cost these days, but you know, you could decide if you're going to buy condoms or donate to this podcast, or I don't even know if that makes sense at all. Just send your condom money my way and still buy condoms, because you don't want a baby. In fact, just buy the condoms and forget about the donation. I'd rather you buy condoms than donate to the podcast, actually. Please cover your cock and protect yourself from disease, and don't worry about the donation. So forget about that. But one thing I would like all of you to do, if you love this podcast, is go to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour shop. We are just a week or so away from having our first order of Duncan Trussell Family Hour t-shirts filled, and I'm really proud of these t-shirts. These t-shirts were created by members of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour message board. They're awesome, psychedelic. We've got the logo for the Duncan Trussell Family Hour there. We also have an Illuminati pyramid with an octopus rising up from behind it, stabbing a vampire. And there's a badass t-shirt with me levitating. And all these shirts are available at the Duncan Trussell Family Hour shop at duncantrussell.com. And your order of these shirts also keeps this podcast afloat. So please go there if you feel compelled to do it and order one of these t-shirts, or order a limited edition Little Hobo Chaos poster, which is available at duncantrussell.com. Please go there, support this podcast if you feel compelled to do so. And if you don't feel compelled to support the podcast financially, then why not support the podcast by contributing all the information that you know to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour forum, which is at duncantrussell.com too. Just click on the forum and sign up and say hello to a lot of like-minded, cool individuals who are having some incredible conversations there and are interacting on the interwebs and in actual real-time space. Go to duncantrussell.com, sign up on the forum, and now it is with great pleasure that I introduce our guest. He has already appeared on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour once before. This will be his second appearance. He's got to be the coolest person on the planet. If the government figured out a way to send out nanobots to swarm every human on the planet and gather up their cool ratios and send them back to some supercomputer, Bert Kreischer would definitely come out on top. He is one of those people that you just want to hang out with all the time. He's magnetic, hilarious, a really warm, incredible person. And I actually went to his house to record this podcast. He'd just gotten back from Italy and was kind enough to give me a couple of hours of his time. And we recorded this in his awesome man cave while sipping wine and smoking cigars at 11 a.m. in the morning, and it was a real blast. So everybody, please send your love energy in the direction of my friend, the hilarious comedian, Bert Kreischer.
Trussell family. Hi. Hi, Duncan.
I am, this is really fucking cool because I am in Bert Kreischer's man cave. I drove to Bert's house. Bert has got the coolest man cave I've ever seen on the planet. It's a cabin in his backyard, which is, I don't know how to, how would you describe this?
It is more room than any dude would ever need. 2 60-inch flat screen TVs. That's a TV too. The map comes up and a TV's behind
how
that.
How do you not? If I had him, that's the first thing I'd show to people. Oh, you've got a raising map.
Where's the? Oh, I think I can do it.
He's got one of these like Texas mogul millionaire hidden TVs behind a map, an antique map of the world. Can you get that thing going?
Yeah, I got to figure out this. I'm not real good at the.
We've got, you know, the classic old rusty saw blades on the wall with tennis rackets and metallic replica planes. But this is a beautiful space. You've got a real just sitting in front of your TV. What is that, an electronic saw?
That's me buying. Yeah, I can't get the map up. I can't figure out how to do it right now. But this thing. This is exactly how it happened. And I'm not one of those vocal people that's. I just recently started saying, if I want something, say that I want it. Yes. So that's like the way to live your life. Like if you want it, put it out in the universe. Say that's what I want, so people know that's what he wants.
Right.
You know, like Daniel Tosh always wanted a late night talk show. He used to talk about wanting a late night talk show. He hasn't gotten one, but he's got a great, very successful show, and I think people heard that and put him in that thing. So I had this room was attached to the garage, and I wanted it to be a man cave. And there's a show on DIY Networks called Man Caves. Serendipitously, when we bought this house, Scripps Network, which owns DIY, purchased Travel Channel. So I became a Scripps employee. So we're at Upfronts one year in Atlanta, and I just go up to the guy, the GM of DIY at the time, Andy Singer, and I go, I want a man cave. He was like, what? I said, I want a man cave. And he was like, you went to Florida State, didn't you? I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, I went to Florida. So if I do it, I'm putting gator shit all over your man cave. And I was like, I want a man cave. I told everyone at Travel Channel, everyone at Scripps. I told everyone I wanted a man cave. Finally, one day, someone's like, fuck, I guess he really wants a man cave. They called me and they're like, you're going to have a man cave. They came out and built it. And then, of course, I have the alligator heads from University of Florida at the front.
Are those real alligator heads?
I have no idea. There's five. There were five all over here, but I took two of them down.
Man, that is the most beautiful. That is so
kegerator, funny. Wine refrigerator, 1,000 cigar humidor.
Shut like, up.
This thing.
Do you smoke cigars?
Not really anymore, but I have it. This thing is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Literally, this is the place where I come and you can just like decompress and write.
Yeah.
And kind of like late night. The best thing is late night. I'll cut off all the lights, turn on the speakers, watch either Game of Thrones or listen to music. Just get weird in here.
Yeah.
And it's like no kids are ever going to wake up. No wife's ever going to hear you. Like I went and got a bottle of wine out of the kitchen to start this.
Yes.
And of course I got an ear beating for that.
For getting some wine?
Yeah. It's 11 in the morning. She was like.
This is, but when you're, there's no time in this man cave. This is like, I feel like I'm in a, some fucking hunting cabin out in the, in Alaska
or something.
We should
release Ice T into my backyard and try to hunt him down.
Okay, hold on one second. Sorry about that. I love Bert's episode so much that I feel like really precious about it and I don't want to.
But it's not a real episode unless we take a break. Like when the mailman came and delivered those tubes, hold on. I love this part of the story. I got to get these tubes.
That was so weird, man. That was the first time I'd ever gotten a tube delivery. Went right on the air. That was really incredible. That was the beginning of the poster sales. That was the beginning of everything right there. That was a legendary moment.
I know the feeling of selling merch. It's the greatest feeling in the world.
Greatest feeling.
When people want what you have. Yes. You know, there's a thing I was thinking about also lately. I don't know. Take it back.
What?
I feel like we're making another shirt now. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. To Italy.
To Italy.
The reason I'm drinking wine at 11 o'clock, if anyone's wondering, because I got off a plane from Italy last night at like 10 after flying 15 hours. And so my time zones are fucked. Like,
wow.
I'm on Italy time because I was there for 2 weeks.
What time is it right now for you?
It is, I think I'd be asleep.
So this is like 3 a.m. or something.
Probably. 2 a.m. Yeah, it's probably 3 a.m. Yeah. Or no, maybe I'd be in the middle of my day. I have no fucking idea. I have no fucking idea. My internal clock is fucked.
Yeah.
When you wake up in the middle of the, like, in the middle of the night, I just wake up in Italy just shaking, like I was like wanting to take a bath. You know, like I just want to fucking, I just want to come down off this. Like I couldn't sleep and then I'd end up drinking more.
Dude, isn't it kind of like, I wonder about that. Like I had a woman who taught me Zen and she told me that when you travel, somehow your astral body can't catch up with your real body.
I fucking believe that 100%.
Yeah,
I believe that 100%.
Metaphysically, you get fucked up.
And then when your astral body does show up,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden you got to go home, and your astral body's like, wait, I just got to Italy.
Yes.
And you're like, well, enjoy the pizza. I'll see you in LA in 2 weeks.
Enjoy the astral pizza. We got to go back. Yeah.
And then as soon as my astral body shows up to LA, I'm going to Scotland. And my astral body will be like, what the fuck, man?
Fuck, man.
I like that term, astral body, because, like, I always feel like when I get to a place that I can't right the boat, you know, like I can't, like I'm waking up a little too early and I'm falling asleep way too late.
Yeah,
I'm drinking way too much and depression, like depression kicks in.
That's it.
Hardcore.
Yes. That's the recipe for depression, man. Throwing the cycle off. When your pattern gets thrown, depression comes in instantaneous. When you can't find your fucking pattern, it's so hard when you're traveling to do that, man. Almost impossible.
It's nice. It's, you know, so funny. The old adage, like Einstein only had one suit, or maybe it was the fly. I don't know. But it could have been the fly.
The fly?
I don't know. It's only fucking, I think Jeff it was the fly. It was the fly.
Jeff Goldblum.
God damn it. I hate when you say something smart and then your brain goes, I think you're thinking of the fly. Oh, fuck.
The fly. That was incredible. He did have only one suit and he had his cock in a mason jar and a medicine cabinet.
Yes, but he cut down his options.
That's
right. Like when you get yourself on a system, like I have a kale shake every morning and it just sets me straight. Like I go, all right, kale shake and coffee, I'm set. I do workouts at a certain time. It's like I know what I'm doing. And then once you get fucking off your kilter, and I'm not home long enough this week to kind of set in, because I'm home for 2 days, and then I go to Boston for a day, and then I come back, and then I go to Scotland the next day. So it's like I just have tapped out. I'm like, fuck it,
right?
Wine at 11 in the afternoon,
yeah.
And then I'm gonna take a nap, pick up the girls.
That's a good day.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty good day. You know what, man? You deserve it. You've been traveling. You've been working. You deserve to come in your man cave. And the fact that you're doing a podcast the day after you get back,
I feel like I'm out of the game. Like, you know, it's like you travel so much. It's with comedy, I feel like so much of it is immersion.
Yes.
You know, if you're just showing up at the clubs, you're seeing people, and you're hanging out, and you're having great conversations about things.
Yes.
You feel, like, connected to the community.
Yep.
And then when you're gone, and you're just in Italy, and I'm not having any comedy conversations, I'm not having any conversations other than what we're shooting, and then I listen on the podcast, I listen to you and Joe's, because that was, the three that I listened to.
Right.
And I'm just like, fuck, I'm out of the loop, man.
Yeah, it is weird like that. You do get this sense of, I know what you mean. Like, once you get out of that loop, it's a very weird connection that you create when you're in town. Like, you get this certain rhythm happening, and you feel connected. I know what you mean. I think it's mostly illusion, though.
I'm sure
it is. It's got to be mostly in your head. Like, you are the heartbeat of comedy, Bert. You're the...
I'm the bleeding liver. I don't fucking... But yeah, so anyway. Okay, here's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Sure.
This Apple fucking TV...
Yes.
...has revolutionized the way... I was telling you the analogy is being the caveman who was... figured out if I put an axle on this wheel and put a wheel on the other side, I might be able to get my logs to the river.
Yes.
Like that, because... If you don't have Apple TV, I'm sure everyone does, and I'm the last one to get it. But basically, you can watch anything online on your TV.
Yes.
Like it's a TV show.
Yes.
So now all of a sudden, Zulu and Hulu, or what, Hulu?
Hulu.
Hulu has become a network for me. It is the exact, if not identical, to my DVR.
Yeah, man. It's incredible. I remember when I got Apple TV and realized that, I don't have to get cable. I can just buy shows I want to see on iTunes.
Or just go online and just watch The Day in the Life on Hulu.
Yeah.
You can is a 22-minute show that is on Hulu. No commercials, or I guess there is one commercial. But like that, I don't ever turn on TV and watch live TV. I watch DVR.
Yes.
So all my Game of Thrones, all of that is now in this exact same box as everything online.
You know the Game of Thrones controversy? Do you know about that?
No, tell it to me.
Here it is. Here's the controversy from HBO, which is that Game of Thrones, for whatever reason, they didn't make it available on iTunes, I guess because it's HBO and it's subscriber-based, and you have to get on HBO On Demand to get Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So Game of Thrones is the most stolen show on the internet because they don't make it easy to pay for it. And so when you don't make something easy to pay for, people just immediately download it and steal it. And HBO has been kind of like, their reaction to it's been kind of dumb and snarky, where they're like, no, we don't really need to do that. Not recognizing that by not creating a situation where people can pay for it to watch it on Apple TV, they're losing millions and millions of dollars just out of being stubborn by not redefining their game plan. It's really stupid.
It's like the people that have the, it's like the water at the bottom of Runyon Canyon, where it's just like everyone's got, there's bottles of water and Snickers bars and sodas.
Yeah.
And it's leave money on a trust-based system.
Yes.
No one steals that shit.
Yep.
Because you're going to look like a real douche when you steal it, and you could have just left a dollar.
You look like an asshole, and people don't want to, people, if you give them the opportunity, a lot of, not everyone, there's some scumbags out there.
There are, totally.
But in general, people don't mind compensating people who are doing things right. And this Apple TV is, what's really exciting about it is it's, you know, it's bringing these issues up. It's like creating these funny situations where people are having to redefine all the old business models that have defined media. And it's fucking exciting, man. It's really cool.
Well, you're cutting out. You're cutting out. I think Louis did it too, but you're cutting out the poor decision makers. The people who fuck up projects, you're cutting them out.
Yes.
And you're asking them to prove their worth.
Right.
Because when he did his hour special and he fucking just, all those people that make money, all those people that make money in that system are now subtracted. And it's just him making something for himself and giving it to me and everyone fucking loving it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm not shitting on anything. I'll shit on projects in the past. Nothing that I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So I'm very attached to this. And anything I've done with Travel Channel, they've always been really good to me. But I've done a lot of projects where you just watched a network fuck it up.
Right.
And you're like, and you're just like, man, you're doing it. You're doing it wrong. Like, I know what's good. And you're all the good shit you're taking out, and you're just putting in this like weak product that you think is your brand. They establish products based on what has succeeded in the past. The reason things have succeeded in the past is because they're brand new, and people are like seeing it for the first time. That's the reason now that Apple TV is going to just take off. And I started thinking, fuck it, man. Like, I could make my own sitcom and just put it on Apple TV.
You sure could.
And then if it's good, people will come out and see my live shows.
Yes.
And that's where I'll make my money.
Yeah. Well, no, or you can, that the thing is, like, when I, people have a lot of ideas about the way the internet works. And so I'm sure before Louis C.K. revolutionized everything by doing his comedy special and selling it himself, I'm sure there were people who probably told him, listen, nobody's going to pay
I guarantee
for your
Dave
special.
Becky sat him down and was like, Louie, because my manager did it to me.
Yeah.
I was like, I have a documentary shot. We're editing it right now. And I was like, fuck it. I'll throw it online for $5 and let people see it that way.
Yes.
People will definitely give me money.
Yep.
And I don't have to worry about trying to get it to a network, like trying to sell it to someone like Showtime.
Yeah.
Who
all
then
those
goes,
meetings.
Let's break it up into 10 episodes. Yeah. I'm like, it's not a series. It's a documentary.
Right.
Well, can we edit? Like, and I'm not saying Showtime would fuck it up. I'm just saying that it's like, you know, Torgasm, you know, was Dane paid for a documentary about himself and then sold it for like $20 million, you can do whatever the fuck you want with it. You can call it Bird Sucks Dick and just draw dicks into my mouth the whole time, just pause my face and, and I'll be like, fuck, I liked it, I thought it was good.
$20 million, I will make a documentary showing me sucking dicks.
I will suck a dick for, I'll suck a dick for $20 million, totally. I'll suck a dick for fucking $500,000.
By the way, if you won't suck a dick for $20 million, then you're probably gay and you're repressed.
I think that should be the show. Where you just get people, don't make him suck the dick, just get him on his knees and go, fuck, psych.
Yeah, you did it. You passed the test.
You passed the test. Here's 10 grand for getting on your knees.
Look, I mean, the whole, like, yeah, $20 million, there's very little. That's where you get into a lot of interesting ethical problems, because it's like, man, I there was that movie that came out where there was a button that you pressed and some stranger in the world would die, but you'd never see them.
Movie, yeah, with Cameron Diaz.
How much did you get for that?
You got, I think you got $1 million.
$1 million.
But it was 1978.
78. So that's like $10 million yeah. now or something, or $8 million. I don't know.
And his wife had half a foot.
Right.
That's another little thing, because he wanted her to jog again. So if he had the money, then he could get the procedure.
He can get
to
her
get
an extra a foot half?
Fucking
that's
really
retarded.
Really lame.
I want my wife to jog again.
Half what? A foot? She's got half a foot.
There's like they've got...
I guarantee you that was some bullshit network executive that knew a story in his past of a guy. He just wants his fingerprint on that script. So the half a foot, that's my idea.
Do you know what that does to your life, to have half a foot?
And no one can really argue, because he's in a meeting and he's like, guys, if she had, you don't know, I knew somebody. And everyone's like, fuck, God, that guy's got a hard on for half a feet. Holy shit. But yeah, I saw that. And then ultimately, because you press a button, they were going to kill you next.
Right.
That was the.
Now, I saw a very funny parody of that where the guy's like, so you press this button and you get $1 million. And a stranger dies, but you get $1 million. And right away, the guy starts pressing the button. Like, he doesn't hesitate. He's like, he starts pressing it again and again and again. They're like, wait, you don't understand. There was no ethical anything. But, you know, it's...
It would be really fun to make just parodies of movies and just taking the fucking... Just taking... just turning the premise upside down and go, oh, this is... Like, do you remember the one where the guy had a cell phone... And he had to drive around in a Jeep, and the cell, he couldn't lose the charge on the cell phone. Like, that the whole thing was based on him finding a charger.
No.
The whole fucking premise of the movie was the guy couldn't let the cell phone die.
Why?
So, and he just had to go from, like, place to place and charge it.
He just kept charging
shit.
His phone?
I'm sure I'm raping it.
What a crackhead.
Like, what a fucking horrible, like. Oh.
What happens if it ran out of juice?
I guess everyone died? I don't fucking know. I don't know.
That's great. Well, you know, man, the idea of what people will do for money in that movie with $1 million and a stranger dies, it's not that far off, because when you're working at Halliburton and you Ooh. Come up with an idea for a weapon and they're paying you $1 million for whatever your new bomb is, it's the exact same thing. Your strangers are going to die for your invention. Like when,
and you're going to financially profit yeah. from the death of people you've never fucking met.
Yeah, when you invent a new form of bullet that's designed to kill people, like a hollow tip.
How come there's not like a terrorist organization that kills people who design weapons? Like kind of like the Terminator.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people go after PETA, people go after people who cut down trees. Yeah. How come someone's not going after the people who are inventing weapons?
Yeah, no, because people, it's very strange. That's a really great question. And it's a question that is probably over the course of the next 15 years going to get a weapons manufacturer's head blown off by somebody listening to
I'm
this.
Glad. Well, and I just did it. I just did what we just said. But like, seriously, they'd stop making weapons
well,
if
we
you
don't
started
know.
Fucking annihilating
we,
weapon
we don't
makers.
Know who, here's the thing. We don't know who the weapons manufacturers are. They're not famous. They don't have award ceremonies like actors have award ceremonies. There's no award ceremony for like most violent bomb, bomb that caused the most pain, bomb that like incinerated the most children,
yeah.
most beautiful bomb. We don't know who built. We don't know who
yeah,
built
you
these
don't,
things.
You don't know.
They're creeps in the basement of buildings that just sit and rationalize to themselves what they're doing. They're murderers. I think people like that who are making bombs that kill tons of people, I think that they, when a serial killer gets arrested or a serial killer, that people find out about serial, I think they look at that guy and they're like, amateur. Look at him.
Doing exactly what he's doing, only I'm getting paid for it.
Yeah, I get paid for my work, you know?
I played with the first, I played with, not played with, but I used the weapon that revolutionized warfare, the longbow.
Oh, wow.
I was really kind of trippy because I had to do, we were doing
range, right? That's the deal.
Is that you could kill people and you didn't have to smell them. Like you could fucking kill someone from across a field. Just... And you never even saw them. You never met them.
I like that you said smell. Because that's how bad people smell back then.
Oh, fuck,
they
yeah.
didn't invent the longbow because they wanted an advantage. They're like, I don't mind going to war, but man, I can't. I don't want to smell these
God,
fucking
man,
stinky
fucking,
soldiers.
Because no one's washing before war. You smell horrible.
No one's washing at all back then. Like
none.
None. So imagine the stink. Do you ever, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Whenever you get anxiety,
Ooh.
Do you ever emit a different... Do you notice that all of a sudden you smell different?
Yeah, I do. But I know that I sweat from different places that I don't normally sweat from.
When you have an... When you feel anxiety.
When I feel anxiety, my ass cheeks just go goose pimply and just start sweating like crazy. And I'm like, oh, I know I'm going to fucking wet these. It's where I don't wear khakis on stage. Because I would have literally just ass prints from sitting backstage and then getting up, and I'd turn around to do a joke, and everyone would be like, I think he's pissing out of his ass.
Dude, when I first started dating Natasha, she had a, you know, we were in the honeymoon phase, she had a wooden chair that I hated sitting in because I get nervous around her, and I would sit in this wooden chair and somehow the reaction of my ass in the chair, I'd get up and you could see my ass prints in the chair.
In the white, like have you like you've left a glass on a table for too long?
Yes.
Like you have that white ring, but it's your asshole and cheeks? Oh, that's fucking hilarious.
It was the worst, and I'd get up and it was a sucking, like... It's like I just separate... Yeah, it was the worst, man.
Do you know what they had in Italy that I fucking loved and... I'm going on that exact same notion. They have that side toilet. Okay, so they have one toilet.
You mean the bidet?
No, 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 no. It's not a bidet, because a bidet shoots out from underneath.
Yeah.
It's an intimate cleaner. So.
What is it?
It's like a hose. I have a picture of it, actually. It's a hose. It's got a nozzle, like a hot and cold water.
Yeah.
And then it's got a spigot.
Yeah.
It's like a spigot toilet next to it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I have no idea what it is. So one day I'm literally like focusing. I take a shit and then I go over to this thing and I'm like, I gotta figure out how to use this. So I sit on it and turn it on so it's spraying my back, like my back of my ass.
Yeah.
I'm like, this can't be it because you can't get underneath.
Yeah.
So I turn around like I'm riding a motorcycle, right? And I'm facing the... Now it's starting to make sense. I'm facing the,
yes,
the faucets and the water's hitting my junk. And I'm like, okay. And then I look up and I see a little bottle facing me in a little cup tray, and it says intimate cleanser. And I was like, "That's for washing your balls." Like,
that's
like,
great.
And I was like, "This is," and I must have washed my balls 100 times because I was like, "It's so great." Because you know how sometimes you want to take a shower, but you don't really want to take a shower.
Yes.
You just want to wash your ass.
Yes.
And I washed the shit. I washed my balls so they were red. Like I couldn't stop doing it.
But that's the best feeling, man. When you like. When you're washing your undercarriage, and you right after that, that feeling of being clean,
just crisp.
We are filthy in the United States.
Oh yeah.
In Italy, they see a problem, and they fix the problem.
They don't have road rage over there.
They don't have road rage.
They have it is the most exhausting, confusing traffic in the world. No lanes. As many cars as can go the width of the road drive. Scooters are going in between everyone. But all you'll get is an arm up. Like, come on. Like, no one gets out of their car and beats the shit out of anybody.
You know why?
Why?
Because they all just wash their balls. And they have that sparkly feeling. They're in the car. They feel clean.
Yeah.
In the United States, when you're in traffic, everyone's pissed because they know they're sitting on a fucking nuclear dump. That their ball. Because in the United States, man, and like I've talked about this before. I'm sorry. But we think about what we do. When we shit, I don't mean to get vulgar. If you guys have kid for I've got an entire class of third graders that listen to this.
Great.
For you guys, fast forward. We wipe our assholes with just white paper.
Yeah,
and that's it. For a lot of people, that's it. Midday, you take white paper and you wipe. Shit, bacteria, like if you put shit under a microscope, man, it looks like fucking Diablo 3. It looks like a World of Warcraft dungeon with just viruses and bacteria crawling all over it. We just take some white paper, do some swipes when we don't see it on the white paper anymore. We're like, oh,
clean.
We're clean. And then you go back to work. And that's it. And then you just sit with the viruses and bacteria just festering in the heat of your ass.
But instead, in Italy, you can sit around fucking rocket style and wash your asshole.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing I've ever done. I washed it every time.
It's civilization.
Oh, yeah. Steve Byrne takes a complete shower after he shits. I'm sure he's going to love for me to share that with everyone. One night, I was like,
that's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah. He goes, I was taking a shit before a show. And he goes, I don't know how you do that. And I said, what? And he goes, just sit in your shit. I go, I wipe my ass. And he goes, no. I mean, like you just took a dump, man. Come on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I got to take a full shower. Like, take all his clothes off and wash his whole body after to he
shits. To purify himself. You know, that is a, that's a, that happens in India. They, you know, that's why people will like, be like, don't shake left hand, the left hand of a person in India. Because in India, they
wipe with their left.
They wipe with, they have buckets of water. And they like take water and they like scrub their asshole with their hand to really clean it out.
Are you serious?
It's the exact same thing that we do in the shower.
Yeah.
But they do it after they shit. We do it in the shower. So when you take a shower, you will take your hand and in some way you might use cloth. Who knows what's around.
Yeah.
You might use soap. Everyone's got a different way of addressing the issue. But you clean your asshole with your hands.
Yeah.
And then you clean your hands. That's it. We do the same thing here. But in India, they do it right after they shit. And scrub it down, and then hopefully they wash their hands. Whole point is, in the West, we ignore our fucking problems. We wipe our ass the same way we go to fucking war. If we can't see it, it's not there. It's the same thing. If there's nothing on the fucking toilet paper, it's not there. Everything's fine. It's the same. We ignore it.
We give our kids to a nanny, they're fine.
Fine. Totally fine. Totally fine. Meanwhile, you've got some, who knows what shit that nanny's whispering in those kids' ears. Have you ever, you know about Carl Jung? You know who that is?
No.
Was a protege of Freud. He's like, came up with the idea of the collective unconscious. So his idea is like, when a very young child, their spirit merges with their nanny. It's not just like the nanny's telling them stuff. It's like the depth of the nanny's psyche imprints itself on the child. So if you've got a nanny from like, you know, you've got a fucking nanny who's, you know, I don't know, engaged in some weird cult or...
Yeah.
You can really
some Jamaican hothead nanny. You got Jamaican hothead kids.
There you go.
Booyaka blood clot mama. Oh, you're going to get a pub. Whatever.
Yeah.
Our fucking nannies were hot as shit. We had nannies because my wife was working and I was doing stand up, and it was like, we were poor as shit. Like, but in order for my wife worked, and that's how we got our apartment because she was managing the property.
Yeah.
So we got a free apartment. So her that's just cool. Having that job was like security in that I never had to worry about losing our house.
Right.
And so, but she didn't make that much money. What she did make went to our nanny so she could have her job, so she could have her apartment, and whatever I made came back to the family.
Do you have to have kids to get a nanny?
That may be my favorite question I've been asked this entire month. I don't think you do. I think you just get a nanny. I think you should totally get a nanny. I just need you to hang out.
It's like uncomfortable at first, like the first couple. It's like you would say to, look, I know this is going to seem weird. Don't have kids.
Wait, do the pitch. I want to hear the whole pitch.
Listen, I've gone through all the resumes of the nannies I was interviewing, and I chose you.
Oh, so now she's excited. Oh, my gosh.
We're going to hire you.
Oh, that's I'm so excited.
Yep, me too.
Oh.
Now, there's a... I'm trying to think of the way to say this.
Right now, she's thinking special needs.
Yeah, it's a, I guess you could call this a kind of I've got a special needs kid in the sense that he's
not here yet.
Not here. Not non-existent. So I don't have a kid. I'm just lonely.
But look, I'm willing to pay you whatever your quote is.
Same thing for the kid, only now you don't have to deal with the kid.
Yeah, we just hang out and fuck around.
Does a nanny live with you?
No.
So a nanny's just there for like...
Shows up from like ours would show up. God, it's been so long since we had a fucking nanny. Ours would show up usually in the mornings when my wife would go to work.
Yeah.
And then just hang out until my wife got home.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd be there. So like, but you never knew if I was going to be there or not. So you'd show up and there was this, and I'm sure they were listening to this because we're very close with all of our nannies.
Yes.
Still to this day, there were three that were all friends of friends and kept passing it on. And they were all beautiful. They were
beautiful
all
nannies.
Gorgeous. All of them were
Can
like.
Can you describe one?
One was, I think, Filipino.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, I don't want to sound creepy in case she does listen to this, but really, just looks like Smoking Hot. Like, Smoking Hot, all of them were cool as shit. So one was like, one was Mexican, one was Filipino, and one was like a 6 foot redhead.
See, that's a problem, man. I know that you never would do this, but like, if you, like, you know, when you, like, with, even when, you know, when you're married, just because you're married doesn't mean you're not going to get super fucking horny from time to time. And
yes,
you know what I mean? Like, there have been times when I've been super horny and like you're in your hotel room and like it doesn't matter if the maid looks like she just climbed
there's
out
been
of
a few
bell
maids
tower.
Where you're like just picture her not in the maid outfit.
Yeah.
She looks good.
Yeah, yeah. Like it would be weird to have a nanny around all the time that's like that you didn't fucking Schwarzenegger fuck his nanny or
I thought you said Nick Swardson.
Yeah,
Nick Swardson fucked his nanny. He got a nanny, no kids, and he fucked her. No, Schwarzenegger did fuck his nanny. I thought you said Nick Swardson. That came out so quick.
Schwarzenegger fucked his maid.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger fucked his maid.
And had a kid by her.
Yeah.
And the kid lived like they
you
fucking...
know what? Schwarzenegger probably fucked his nanny when he was kid.
Here's the thing. You do get an emotional attachment to these people because they're in your life so much.
Yeah.
Man, there's no better feeling, I'll tell you right now, than like Mondays. I fly home in the Monday morning, she's there, I take a nap, and then I wake up at like 5 and turn on Monday Night Football, and all my nannies loved football. So I turn on Monday Night Football and I start making dinner, like a big dinner. My wife would come home. The nanny was there. We'd open a bottle of wine. We'd all hang out. It was like such a great... And then at one point, we had like two trading off back and forth and they'd both come over and we'd all hang out. They were a part of our family. To this day, my daughters... they come over and hang out with my daughters.
That's cool.
And it was and they weren't that expensive. I remember we had one that was like a fucking model and my wife fired her. She was a fucking
lunatic.
Too much and not all there. And my wife would come home and me and her would be sitting on the couch watching TV and the kids would be in the room by themselves. My wife's like, I'm not fucking paired to hang out with you. But I was like, oh, what are you gonna do?
Who picks the nannies? Like when you're interviewing nannies,
she does. But I would never greenlight fat ones. Like I remember there was a pig that came over, like fucking big, like easily 2 bills, right? And she came over, and the second she walked in, my wife looked at me as I went. My wife's like, oh fuck, like.
That's great. You just pick hot nannies. That's why. So it's no coincidence that you landed.
Oh, there's no, like, my wife knows I'm not going to cheat on her, but I'm not going to hang out with a fucking 6. Like, I got to go to the fucking store with this girl sometimes. Like, I want to fucking rock around with a dime.
Right, right, right. So you get the, I didn't know that there was like hot, man, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Get a nanny. You know what? Okay. This is what you should do. You should do a podcast where you take in applications, set up applications, like I'm applying for nanny, and then ask them, like interview them on the podcast. I hope you're cool with this. I'm doing this for the podcast. Yeah. And then towards the end, go, listen, is it a deal breaker, but I don't have a kid? And they're like, excuse me? And go, I just want to know, would you take the job?
It's a great prank call. How much is a nanny? How much?
I have no fucking idea. I've never paid a bill in my life.
I would imagine nanny. That's awesome. I imagine they're I mean, they've got to be more than...
Like $100 a week or something.
They got to be more than 100 a week.
I don't know. I have no fucking idea.
100 a week.
I'm totally guessing.
$400 a month. You can hire a beautiful woman to live with you if you've got, like, a kid.
Yes, right? It's got to be. Okay. Yeah. I have no idea. What time is it? I'd ask Leanne, but she's in therapy.
I bet it's we're talking, it's got to be like $160 a day.
Yeah, something like
$20 an hour or something like that.
It can't be that much. Get a fucking, hire an assistant. I want an assistant so bad.
But you know, man, that whole thing of like, I would much rather than hire an assistant and fuck the assistant, if that's what we're talking about.
Okay, would you right now, if Tom Cruise called up, I'm just using Tom Cruise, he's the biggest movie star in the world. If he called up and he was like, Duncan, I like your energy, I've been listening to your podcast, I want you to kind of put your career on back burner and I want to hire you to be like my right-hand man. You're going to be my assistant, we're going to fly everywhere together, but I just want to fucking, I want your energy.
How much? How much would I ask for from Tom Cruise?
He said, I like you, I listen to your podcast, you're going to be like my right-hand man, you're going to go on set with me, you're just going to hang out, I just need your energy, you cheer me up. How much? How much to basically stop doing stand-up and take whatever you do on stage, give it to one person for a year?
I would never do that. I wouldn't do a million dollars. No!
$1 million.
I don't want to fucking ride around with Tom Cruise.
You're sitting in the jet with him and he's like, Turn it on, Duncan. I'm feeling bound.
I mean, I think Tom Cruise seems like a nice enough guy, man. But you're talking to, like, if that happened, I would feel like, okay, this is some kind of crazy Scientology shit here, man. This is some kind of like induction thing where they're trying to pull me into the mothership, and I don't want to go there. Like, because when you're in a plane with Tom Cruise, that's, you know, the masks are coming off.
Oh,
like,
oh, but wouldn't that almost? Wouldn't you do it just for the fucking stories? Just to watch him take the mask off and tell you secrets?
Yeah.
Oh, like I...
Because, like, he would be like, you know what it's like? Sometimes I wonder about the Scientologist, the high-ranking Scientologist. Sometimes I wonder, maybe they stumbled on some alien technology or some shit, man.
I got pitched Scientology by two friends of ours who are Scientologists. We bring them to dinner. This is a fucking little bit... I'm going to sound really crazy when I say this. We bring them to dinner. They're in recovery, so we can't drink. Yeah. As a joke, I grab a gun, like, as a joke. Just because I was like, I need something that's mine. A little, you know, like when I drink at a party, then if I'm having a bad time, I can just focus on that drink and be like, I'll never. Yeah. I'm going to go get another one. No one will know. I'll pound it in the bathroom. Like, sure. So I bring a gun down and I have it in my waistband.
Wait.
Just, okay. I know that.
Eating at your house?
I'm eating at my house. So I grab.
Oh, so you have one of your pistols?
Yeah.
In your waistband.
In my waistband. just for me, like a little secret for me. To know that it's there. I know it sounds really crazy, but it started when I was getting cigars and I saw it, and then I was like, well, I can't fucking drink. And then I was like, oh, this will be like a little secret. So I put a pistol in my waistband. And I was like, it's fun, man. And I swear to God, if you can do this, if you have people over your house, put a pistol in your waistband and just know that you're like, you almost feel like Donnie Brasco.
Is it loaded?
I didn't even check. I just put it in my waistband because I grabbed it. I'm sure it was. So I start talking, like I say to them in the middle.
Do you have a gun on you right now?
No, I don't. It's in, this is, I want to say this is, when we had kids, but they were babies.
Yeah.
So it was floating around. I see. Now we have kids. Yeah. It is unloaded. Yes. And in the bullets were one place, you know.
Sure.
So I jokingly say to the guy, now everyone's sober. So I'm like, and I'm a little aggravated by that because I can't drink.
Yes.
Because they're fucked up their life. So now that dictates how I got to live mine. Like,
yeah,
what the fuck?
That's retarded.
It makes me crazy. So we're talking and I'm like, so you guys believe in aliens? As just like a baseline.
Yes.
And the guy's like, well, it's a little different. My wife's like, Bert, come on. Don't be a fucking asshole. And I'm like, well, no. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm curious. I've always wondered.
Yes.
Do you believe in aliens? And they're
great
like,
great question.
And they're like, well, they're like, what religion are you? I said, Catholic. And they're like, okay, can I just, real base, can I ask you some questions about yours? I go, of course. I'm an open book. Whatever, I'll answer anything. And they go, well, then I will too. They're like, do you believe in other life forms than in this universe? And I go, yes. And they go, you do? I said, yes. And they go, okay. And your religion, do you believe that Jesus was hung on a cross and put in a cave and then came up 3 days later? And I go, well, and they like, do you believe Moses actually split the sea? And I was like, well, it's, you know, it's euphemisms. And like, so you're saying that in your book, that's not really true, but you believe in it. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, but my religion, you believe there are other alien life forms, but you're questioning why I believe in it. And I was like, oh, motherfucker. I was like, is this how they get you?
They got you.
And I was like, yeah. And they're like, so I'm just saying, why would you believe in what you believe in when you admit it's not really true?
Right.
It's all based on faith.
Yeah.
When my religion, you actually believe in.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck. And here's the other thing they do. There's an actor's studio that there's like the actor's gang or something. Or I'm speculating, but there's an actor's studio that's set up for Scientologists.
Right.
They go in and they try to bring you into their religion.
Yes, I know.
They
about
teach
that.
You acting and they bring you into their religion.
I heard about that.
My wife was in it. My wife's best friend was in it. And they do this thing where they assess you.
Yes.
They assess you every week. And they assessed my wife and her friend. And they fucking called these bitches out. They were like, you have this. You have, and it was like you were drunk and calling them on their shit. And both my wife and her friend quit. And they're like, fuck that place. And I was like, Jesus Christ, it sounds like they know what they're talking about.
Wow.
I was like, and then I started thinking like, fuck, all I want is something to like go to bed at night and go,
yeah,
like, at least I got that. I don't have to worry about death because I got that.
Right.
You could fucking convince me to be a Scientologist in a fucking heartbeat.
Well, I am a Scientologist.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up.
No, I'm not.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, that was fucking good.
I'm not, but I do know. Here's something fascinating about Scientology. Do you know about L. Ron Hubbard and
yes,
Alice?
Yes, my dad represented L. Ron Hubbard when I was a kid.
Represented him in what?
And they had some defamation cases of them kidnapping kids and putting them into the system or something like that.
Your dad represented L. Ron Hubbard when he was...
L. Ron Hubbard.
Shut the fuck
up. My dad was out of Tampa, and they would use ports because he never like landed anywhere. So because he lived on a boat because yes. taxes were after him.
Yes.
So he'd come into Clearwater. My dad would dive down to Clearwater and meet with him on the boat and then flew out to L.A. a few times.
Dude, you've got to get the files.
I have no... My dad said that they were all really nice people. Like, my dad's not someone that...
Yeah, but
fucking...
get the files. Your dad's got fucking Hubbard files. That's yeah. precious shit, man.
I mean, it's
that's...
1980, so like, or back then.
Get the files.
Yeah, I got it.
These are awesome. We want to see this. Do you know about L. Ron Hubbard and Aleister Crowley? Do you know about that?
No.
You know who Aleister Crowley is?
No.
Okay, so Aleister Crowley, also known as the Beast 666, was one of the most notorious masters of the occult, and he wrote countless books, and they're brilliant. He was a genius, and he was also a famous like rock mountain climber. He climbed K2, and he was a mystic who is a very controversial figure, to say the least. I talk about him on this podcast probably a little too much because I'm fascinated with the guy. But interesting things about Aleister Crowley. Churchill actually hired him to fight the Nazis at one point. And so, you know, the because he was so notorious as this, like, master of the occult, that Churchill knew that the Nazis were into the occult and using yeah. occult shit. And he's like, if the Nazis are using occult, we'll use the occult. Give me Crowley. And so, like, they hired Aleister Crowley. And so, you know, the peace sign?
Mm-hmm.
That was invented by Aleister Crowley. He came up with that for Churchill because that represents Osiris, which was this Egyptian god. And so he came up with that symbol. And there's a lot of other shit.
Shut up.
Yeah, he totally infiltrated our culture, and people don't even realize how much he saturated our culture. But here's where it gets really fucking cool. So Crowley had a lot of like very interesting disciples, and one of his disciples was this rocket scientist by the name of Jack Parsons, who is one of the most famous rocket scientists, who came up with, I think he invented something to do with solid state fuel. There's a crater on the moon named after him, the Parsons crater. And Parsons was a devout follower of Crowley, and he would, before he did his rocket tests, he would say prayers to Thelema, which is the energy that Crowley was into and talked about. And it's a very deep and complex religion that Crowley was coming up with. But Parsons, Crowley was 100% against monogamy. And any of his followers, he would say, you can't be in a monogamous relationship. It's the most ridiculous. He's awesome. He's like, it's the most ridiculous imposition. You can't do it. So Parsons was married at the time and living with his wife and his wife's sister. And his wife went out of town, and his sister started wearing his wife's clothes, or his wife's sister started wearing his wife's clothes, and he started fucking his wife's sister. And anyway, guess who else they were hanging out with there?
L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron fucking Shut Hubbard. Up. And L. Ron Hubbard was also a disciple of Crowley. And L. Ron Hubbard, basically the idea is that a lot of the shit that's in Scientology and a lot of the stuff that you see in Scientology, a lot of the ideas of Scientology were Crowley's philosophy that Hubbard stole and transformed into his own religion, which
Dianetics.
There you go, dude. And so that's the fucking connection, man. One of the biggest new religions in the world is a basically, according to many people, I don't know if it's true, is a reformulation of Crowley's philosophy, which he got from the Sufis and from having like visions out in the desert.
Shut up.
So look at that. Isn't that fucking nuts? Think about that shit, man.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? And your fucking dad worked with Hubbard.
Knew the guy.
Your dad's connected to fucking Crowley.
Knew it.
Shit, that's cool.
We were this close to being Scientologists, and I'd probably be so fucking famous right now. That's the only reason I ever be a Scientologist. I'd be the worst. I'd be like, when do we get famous, guys?
Look, man, here's the thing. Crowley was a proponent of the idea that there are extra-dimensional entities that you can make contact with that will give you information that you can use for your own purpose to fulfill your will or whatever it is that you want.
Okay.
Hubbard, apparently, in Scientology, they talk about these, like, I think they call them, what's the name of them? They say that we're all covered with these fucking things. You know what I'm talking about? They're called, what the fuck?
I did a little research. I don't remember fucking.
They're called like tachyons or something. There's some name.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
What are they fucking called? You know what I'm saying? They're like, we're covered with like a kind of like a swarm of these like entities that control us. They're called, it's like dust.
Sensors or I fucking forget.
Signifiers or something. They're called fucking, but anyway, yeah. So it's like, they're like, what if like Hubbard didn't just rip off like some philosophy that Crowley had, but what if Hubbard made contact?
I feel like, do you ever, okay, I feel like there's things I can't explain, like genuinely.
Right.
Like, I don't know where, do you ever say something, I can only incorporate it to funny. Did you ever say something so funny and you don't know where you thought of it and it just came out?
Yes.
And you're like, where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah.
Like, I believe there's, I don't know. You could convince me of anything. That's why I don't go to the fucking, I wouldn't go to a Scientologist meeting, because I guarantee you they'd have me in a heartbeat. I'd be like, fucking makes sense, man. Makes sense.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem is like, in social psychology, they've studied this phenomena, which is if you say one thing that's true and then follow it with something that's false, the person's going to believe the thing that you said that's false because you said something that's true.
Okay.
So if like there's some truth in other words, like this is like what all like shitty like religions that end up getting corrupted and fucked up, they end up with a nugget of truth. They end up with a real thing. So like in Christianity, you end up with this like possibility that there was this super powerful mystic that existed about 2,000 years ago who had really represented, like, because we know when monkeys first started coming out of the trees and using tools, there had to be the first monkey that came out of the tree and used a tool. And it would have been a controversial monkey, like because the ground was covered with snakes and lions and it was safer up in the tree. And then some monkey went skittering down and started, like, picked up a stick and started poking in a termite mound. And the monkeys in the tree would be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Who do you think you are?
I love that premise of the first monkey to do things. Like, the first, that to me was the basis of how I wrote comedy when I first started, was that first. Like the first guy that got girls to swallow loads.
Yes.
Like that first caveman that was like, oh, oh, oh.
You know the first guy, you know who that was? The first guy to get girls to swallow loads? The first guy.
Oh my God, I'm going to fucking pass out. Oh, that was the first guy. Before that, there were cavemen. Then there was a guy.
That was like the first. That happened first. But, man, yeah, the first...
the first guy, his, all of a sudden, his back erected, like...
she just didn't know. Oh. It's like when you open up a bottle that's been shaken up and it sprays. Like, you didn't... Yeah. They probably just didn't know that that's one of the facets of the...
Oh, God.
But the first monkey that came out of the tree and started using tools would have seemed to the other monkeys to be magic. In the same way we talk about Jesus, he walked on water and healed the sick. And to us, it seemed, now we're like, no one could do that. That's ridiculous. But in the Bible, Jesus says, anyone can do this. That's one of the things he keeps saying, is like, anyone could do this shit.
Yeah.
You could do this. So it's almost like he had a cheat code. It's almost like Jesus came into the video game with a cheat code, like in Contra, up, up, down, down, left, left, right, right, X, okay. X. He came in with a cheat code, and he was doing all this stuff that you can do in this video game, and people were like freaking the fuck out. In the same way that if you saw like the first monkey who came out of the tree and started eating, the monkeys would be like, what is that?
So wait, is this what I'm hearing? And this is like, is this what you're saying? Because this may be the most, is it that everyone, when Jesus was around, was just super, super stupid?
Yes.
And then he was, I one time tried to Google what Jesus's IQ was,
yeah,
not realizing they didn't have IQ fucking tests back then. So basically, that makes the Bible so funny. Yeah, how the fuck does it say? It was 182. He took the test. No, he did good. He had his number 2 pencil
his
and everything.
His parents took him to a guidance counselor.
After I think he should be the Messiah.
After
he's
first
a really
miracle.
Smart.
Your kid's like got a Messiah style like you.
So wait, that makes the Bible so much funnier is if everyone is just like fucking really stupid.
Well, you want to hear something really crazy, man?
Yeah.
And like this is a controversial thing to say, but I actually looked it up on the internet and this I'm going to say this. I don't want anyone to get offended by this because I don't mean it in an offensive way.